objective is, they want to keep the production increase down as low as possible.
Bill Alfano called 287. Bill Alfano called 287.
Putting their material in the field, right? But they want the aftermarket.
He's in the cafeteria.
And they had a girl there that looked like a clone, Suzanne Somes. Just a stupid, you know?
Oh, shit.
And she played a harp fantastically, you know? Beautiful.
Yeah, you enjoyed the show.
I enjoyed the hell out of it. Hello, how about you and Daddy Clark coming on over to the Tree Pit City thing?
Where are you from? Where'd you learn, how long you been playing the harp? Boy, that's beautiful. Oh, you're making records. Every time she opened her mouth, she had to be a very intelligent woman. Had to be that.
Yeah, just, the harpist?
Yeah.
The harpist?
I don't know, but she ain't in any danger of drowning since.
Who's Alan?
Huh?
I'll tell you, she had arms, man, just from that harp. You know, really, your fingers and hands are all calloused and that from doing that? That's hard. She said she just ordered a new one. $15,000. I said, what the hell could you do with two harps? You know, like, really.
One's for Sunday.
One's enough.
Alan, Ron, what could you do with one?
What could I do with one? Nothing, but I wish the hell I could play like that. Because, boy, that's beautiful. I was sitting there really enjoying that.
Yeah.
Not as good as on the other notes, that girl singing.
Oh, remember that?
I remember that. You weren't supposed to drink all over me.
Is anybody here now?
No, we're waiting for Mr. Ferraccio from the shop.
He's a good half hour.
Where's
Alan? Is here?
Yeah.
Is Alan?
Alan?
Yeah, but Alan's there, so he's
probably hasn't come
right into that.
So they have a problem with transparency going on. Why? But this is pretty much the same thing you're putting up there anyway.
It's exactly what he's going to put up there. Did you explain to him what was happening?
No, I don't. You want an explanation at this
point. Well, on the system?
Hardware.
It's hardware.
Hardware.
Now it's hardware. Yesterday was Patterson was underwater. Now it's
no, yesterday was
software.
That was software yesterday?
Well, it looked as though it was software, but it was really hardware. George called it.
They'll probably go tell us.
No, they really don't know what's wrong. No, no. Now,
you figure out what's happening.
The last time I talked to him, which was when I just got off the phone 5 minutes ago.
Who's hardware? Ours or telephone company?
IBM. It's a controller. They have the
They're
talking
now.
Well, actually, it's actually, it's a combination of hardware and software, because when the hardware goes down, they get the hardware back in service, okay? But the things that it's processing at the time stay open, and then the software really should take over at that point and say, you know, I couldn't do this guy, get rid of him, and it doesn't.
That's
the supervisor.
See the notes.
Maybe you're better off sitting on the side over here.
I know you find it's hard to believe that the air conditioning is supposed to be on. Yeah. It's comfortable. Believe that?
What?
Nice.
What's
the matter with this?
This guy's got a vest on you. All right, go ahead.
The only one I don't know is these two guys down. My name is Larry.
Hi, Larry.
And what I'm going to do is give a little presentation on PPNC, and stop me at any point. It's not, you know, a run-through demonstration. It's more what I really want to do, more discussion than demonstration.
PPNC stands for?
Yeah. My next thing. PPNC, first of all, stands for Production, Planning, and Control. Okay. They just arbitrarily picked that for whatever reason. I don't know why. You picked it.
Everybody else in the world comes to shop and look.
Well, I wanted it to be like everybody else.
We're not.
Actually, everybody else calls it CRP, Capacity Requirements Plan. Anyway, what it is first of all, it's a shop floor control system. And secondly, it's a job costing system, working process. And that's really the two areas that it hits. And as far as systems go, all right, it fills a gap between what MRP says you should be doing and the information once it's out on the floor, okay? MRP takes in customer orders or wherever your requirements are coming from, goes down through the bill's material and say, you have it on hand, you don't have it on hand, put this purchase order out there, put this shop order out there. And once you do that, okay, you put the firm planned order in, or you release the job to the shop, MRP is happy. That's the end of MRP as far as it's concerned. The only time MRP can give you any kind of information is when it starts becoming overdue. And the only thing it can tell you is that you're overdue so many pieces. You have no idea where it is out on the floor and all that. And obviously, what you really want to do on PPNC to come in, and then you can eventually come back and tell your customers when things are going to be ready. So that's the scheme of things, is just a circle diagram through the different systems. As far as information within PPNC, there's a couple of areas, right, where major areas, if you would. So I'll talk about each area and then stop me at any point. First area is the master routings. The master routings are like the building material in MRP. By operation, it tells you what has to be done at each operation and where it's supposed to be done at. Okay, very similar, but you know what routings are. And they're tied into, each operation is tied into a work center. And this is
one of
the first grade. It's all clear now to me.
Can you just turn off these buttons?
This is for it.
It's the same first page we have, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It should be in the order.
These printouts here are actually a printout of what an actual screen looks like, with the exception that our system, when we display a screen, it gets rid of all blank lines, so it looks like it's all pushed together. But this is actually, if you look at it,
yeah, these are either the screen. These are either screens or reports. Okay, that'll be okay.
Okay.
This is the information that would be in the work center record. There's a work center number. It's a four-digit number. There's a description as to what the work center is. There's a queue time, okay? It's in days, okay, saying how long a part normally sits at this work center before it actually starts running. There's a machine rate factor saying that the guy is usually working two machines in this work center at the same time. An average earned rate, which comes into play within the costing system, and the alternate average earned rate is when you start doing your new standards for next year, you start flipping them like
you that, do. Isn't that more closely tied with an incentive system?
What's that?
The average earned rate?
No, not really. It's the average of the guys that are working in that system.
So it would take into account then first and second shift operations and premium times in therein?
It would just be whatever the guy, whatever the hourly rate is of all the guys in the work center, divided by the number of guys.
Just the average. Labor grade people working in your shop.
Most of them, and within a work center, are the same labor grade, right? So that whatever the average of that labor grade is, that's what would be in there.
Okay.
It's similar to a straight tonnage hourly wage that we would have. AER close to it, suppose the base rate and what the guy made in terms of bonus.
That's what I just
asked.
Yeah, but that's not what it doesn't have to be that. All it is, the concept is that it's the average.
Wages.
Right.
Okay. All right.
The concept is that if you had three different labor grades working in a work center, the average would be the middle one.
Could be.
That's basically.
No, that's not really the way you get an average.
No, but that's what you're going to get with the
arithmetic
average.
You watch.
What's the queue time again?
The queue time is the number of days that a part sits in that work center before it starts to be worked on.
Would this include setup time and stuff like that?
No. Setup time is
to fuel that, where would the information come from for that queue information?
Industrial engineering comes up with the times. They do a study and, you know, sit there and start watching, you know. I'm not exactly sure how they did it.
Well, Blackman was telling us when he came from Phillipsburg, Ed Blackman used to be here. He said that they went out and actually took like a tracking report like we had and did some kind of little calculation about an average of how long the job sat in the work center, and then just went in that way and did the cube.
Well, you've got something. You've got an analysis going on right now.
I did my own thing, yeah. It's that kind of thing is what they did at Phillipsburg.
Yeah, they did some historical job information.
Simply, you know, you can take how long a job runs through the shop and divide by the number of operations.
Well, you could just,
Yeah.
Or you could put a queue time in from your move time. One thing they did that I don't like, according to Gleitman, I don't know if they're still were doing it when they finally closed, but they would go out and find a queue time or an average, and then they built the whole system around it, which really means if you had any rod out there, you factored it into everything you were doing.
They did adjust things after. Well, once the system starts running, okay, then the information starts being captured historically, and there are reports where you can see what your actual queue times are. Okay, but, you know, to start off with, you know, there's nothing. So there are, you know, there are reports that, you know, show each job and each operation that went through the work center, how long it took before the last one finished its piece, okay, and the next one started up.
So what you're saying then, if we were to implement this system, could we collect data without loading the queue time and then go back and load the queue after we collect
the
data?
Yeah, you can initially put in a one.
That's because I don't have the type of department where I can sit out there and put a guy out there watching material move for 6 months.
Without the queue time, though, you could give a promise to a customer.
Yeah, right. You're gonna exactly. Wind up with problems if you don't have something.
No, that's right. What we're saying is I can't commit the people to do it. So if there was a way to get it off of the report.
Well, the queue time is very important because that's how you do a back schedule.
Yes.
What we did, okay, when they first loaded all the queue times, we did an analysis between what the queue time for the routing added up to compared to the lead time in MRP, and said, you know, are they close? And if they're not, you know, who's wrong?
Well, yeah.
You know, so, you know, that kind of thing you can do once you start loading the
You could take, like, the last time I was involved putting one in, what we did was take the... For queue time, we used actually the estimated move time between the load centers. As calculated, a day, if we said something like there's going to be a day to move between load centers. We just arbitrarily said it shouldn't lay more than a day to be moved. Now, we didn't recognize there was a queue time. We said it's going to be a day. And then we had to
assuming that as soon as it's moving, it started.
Right. For purposes of the router flow.
For the initial.
And then what we did is we ran MRP based on different lead times. We didn't let the router standards generate the MRP
lead
time.
Oh, no.
So then we set the system up that way. Then as we started getting the reports out, they'd move the router out.
Right.
It's better, in my opinion, to do it that way, to expand, than to start like this, because somehow you never shrink.
Acute
time is always required.
Right.
We always got to leave like 4 weeks, you know.
Larry, better help me understand this queue time. What would be built into that? Because one of the things you're using it for is to give promise dates, I would imagine.
Want dates.
The want dates. You'd also have to allow the time that took to, in that queue time would also be the amount of time that it stayed up in offices for you to get the paperwork back to you, right?
No. This is between
the job's on the floor now.
Yeah.
Right.
This is like you're going to go from the saw now to Ricky's load center. How long would it lay at the saw before it moved? How long would it lay before Ricky started working on it?
Yeah.
You know, we would start off and say an average, we're going to allow 2 days.
So is there anything we promise on that then is stuff that's already on the floor?
Yeah.
Well, this is going to feed MRP as far as
It doesn't feed MRP, okay? That's the one thing that I wanted to say before. What it does, okay, is if the queue times in the routing don't add up to the lead time for the part, all right, there are reports that'll tell you that. But depending upon the routing, okay, you can have multiple routings for a part. You may not want them to be exactly alike because you know, one may be, you know, through one set of work centers and another through another set of work centers. And so there really is no automatic tie between the two, right? If you want to set your lead times in MRP to what your routings add up to, then fine, you know, you can do it. But it's not going to do it unless you tell it to do it.
So the queue time is actually for the time that's found for them.
Yeah, but that's good because it takes a while to prove the routers.
That's true.
Assume the routers are going to be right. The other thing too is like if you had something like a frame and you started a frame line out there and you were running 20 frames and you had 5 operations, and theoretically this thing would sequence those things. It would take one frame to every operation, then frame number 2 to every operation, frame number 3 to every operation. It wouldn't recognize, I'll bet you. It wouldn't recognize that you're running 20 things simultaneously through a station.
What's that?
You're running a frame line. You did a you put a frame line out here for fabrication, let's say. You're going to weld frames. And you were running 20 frames in a group and you had five stations for that frame, or 5 operations out there. If you blew it through this, you would take the first piece on the order. Say I had a group out there for 20 frames. You would take the first piece on the order and go through operation 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's for the whole job.
You're going to run them. You're not going to run them simultaneously.
You're going to run.
You're going to blow
the
lead time all the way.
That's not.
It's going to say start the first piece here. Is my point.
Yeah.
Instead of recognizing that they may be running simultaneously in a line. So you can get stuck using that thing for MRP until you really.
Well, yeah, but sort of.
Cumulative sequential as opposed to.
Right.
Cumulative simultaneous.
Right.
You add time to it.
All right. This is basically the way the back scheduling works. The job consists of 4 operations, and the want date for the job is 10:30. So that gets assigned to the last operation. And then the queue time for that work center is 3. So back. Wrong. That's why it's confusing. But it backs off to 3, okay, and assigns that as the want date to the prior operation, and that has a 2. So.
It's pretty complicated, isn't it?
See, the benefit that would be though out there would be that each foreman in each load center would have a want date for his load center. It wouldn't be the want date for the whole job. It would be the want date for his operation.
But anyway, what it would do is correctly take the queue days and subtract it, okay, and come up with a want date for the prior operation. Okay.
In each load center.
Does that take in consideration actual manufacturing time also?
Yeah, what about runtime?
No. Okay. But that's subject to change. I mean, just because, you know, that set of rules was designed, you know, in the system initially doesn't mean it has to stay like that. In fact, they didn't want it to stay like that and then they moved out. Okay, but they never could come up with
the hours.
No. They came up with the hours, but they never sat down and said, this is exactly what we want to do. Okay? And for whatever reason, I'm not really sure, but each operation does have a setup time, right? And it does have a production run time, okay? So, you know, that's in minutes, or a fraction of minutes, okay? So that could be taken into account, too, and, you know, multiply by the number of pieces and all that to come up with, you know, additional.
So what we're really saying is we can choose either A from column A or from column B. We can either go in and say, we want to use queue times to calculate the back scheduling want dates, or we want to use the standards on a router and some move time factor to calculate the want dates by operation.
The move time factor would be the queue.
Yeah.
Right. And again, in the work center, in each work center, there's a shift number of shifts that the thing is working. Okay. So that then starts figuring into, you know, how many
hours, how many days
you really have.
I would think.
So that's that's where it starts becoming complicated. You know, how you really want to handle this. You know,
I think wouldn't we be better off doing it with the hours and a queue for a move, because then we get to prove the hours from the reports.
state if we want to.
This is, if we, wouldn't we be better doing it from the standard hours on the router and a queue time for moving versus an average queue? Because then we'd be in a better position to validate the standard hours on the router. Maybe the hours completely wrong.
You can still validate the standard hours on the router. You're just going to wind up with different want dates on your operation.
You're still going to report against the standard. You're just saying that the back schedule's going to be done by a queue.
We're just talking back scheduling.
So then your queue is equal to setup, production, waiting, estimated waiting time, and transit move time, if you will, from point A to point B.
Well, let's ask a question. Now, that's going to establish back scheduling want dates by operation. But what's going to schedule, what are we going to look at for to calculate the load out there? The hours?
The hours, the production hours.
Availability.
Right.
So that's just going to say that, hey, on an average, when Piscataway or somebody calls, you're going to have to wait 3 weeks.
Right.
But they're really going to tell them why.
Well, your lead time tells them that, too. And, you know, hopefully they're somewhat in sync. You know, it may not be day for day, but it should be close.
How's your shift working there? Larry, if you have, you're going to run, I think, two shifts, and we have a queue time out there 2 days, would that actually figure out one day?
I don't know. That's up to the calculation that you come up with. So that's what I mean. That's where it starts getting complicated. How do you really want to take into account some of these things?
Larry, is this thing currently functional any place?
Yeah, it was. In Phillipsburg.
But I'm saying today.
No
one is using it.
No one is using it.
Is Shippensburg moving towards this?
I saw it in Phillipsburg.
It's pretty good. Rob Rope is coming back on it.
It's got most of these.
Okay.
You guys have put most of the escape clauses in too so that you can cheat any way you want. Which I saw in Phillipsburg.
Yeah.
Change your ad. So they did a pretty good job. From what I saw, that was a couple of years ago. I'm assuming you put a lot more in here since I saw it.
What is
it
in Phillipsburg or for Phillipsburg?
Rockville.
This way.
That's
Rockville. What is Rockville doing right now?
They're tied in with East Brunswick, the tool group, and they have a shop floor control system that they're running, you know, out of East Brunswick.
And do they filter into that system all of the routers that was on the Postbury plant?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they have a manual load about 1,200 routers. I guess they're still shopping. Because, you know, the work centers change and the times change, everything changes.
The whole concept of the plant changed.
Yeah.
And according to what how they set up the machines.
So they had it on. I guess, you know, they're still, I guess, I'm sure they're still doing it. You know. But, you know, that's what, you know, they had certain products, you know, they all the fonts and cleaned up. Those are all the way out of the way up to those. Not only
that's the easiest way.
They want to change the process, and just blitz, you know, like the insertion of bits, and you have to do it with your induction heating,
and then adjust that
out.
Because you know, even working in that,
you get a whole bunch of other things.
Where your router says, like, pool parts, fill material, and then the next operation does something.
The system that they're running out of East Brunswick, it's a nice shop for reason, but it's everything that's in ours except the costing portion. Okay, and the costing.
Well, no, it's going to say to you, you should have started me 72 months ago.
If
that means if the queue is inflated.
If the queue is inflated.
Yeah. Unreasonably.
That's what's going to happen. The guy's going to say, oh, well, geez,
since we're on
back schedule. Look at that.
Exactly.
Since we're on back schedule, let's keep talking about it, I guess. Let's say today's date is 10/27, okay? And in this case, those coupons would not, or those want dates would not change, okay? Even though you may not have even started this operation, okay? So there's no, if when the order is wanted at today's date, if there's not enough days in between there for the routing to fit, okay, it's not going to compress those queue times so that it fits within the, you know, today's date. Right, so the things that are really overdue, you can see how far overdue they really are. Okay?
so you don't have this expansion and contraction of queues.
Yeah, but see, what's going to happen is everything's on it, just like one day.
Pardon me?
We're going to have, well, no, no, I'm just saying, we're going to have, if the router lead time with the queue comes out to be longer than the MRP lead time, we're going to have everything on the hot list. And everything's going to be priority one, which is stated, so it's about...
The want date, the reality, the real want date is inserted after the final at the final operation, correct? And then backloading takes place automatically, and fictitious want dates or impossible want dates may occur as a result of queue inaccuracy.
Right. Or based on today's current date.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, let's stay with one.
Which is no good when we have today, so that day, now we have a ridiculous date by operation.
You have too many parts that you're trying to make in the workstation.
That's loading, huh?
That's loading, yeah.
Does the system adjust?
No.
The price data?
It'll tell you, yeah.
It'll tell you what's backed up. When we get to some of the capacity reports, you'll see how you get...
It'll tell you got 100 hours available, and you got 500 hours in there, and you better do something.
It'll tell you what was the maximum number of hours you got out of a work center, you know, and the date that it happened, so, you know, maybe you had 3 shifts out there instead of 1 today, you know? And it'll tell you, how much is planned down the road. You know, maybe you've got a big bubble here, you know, nothing down, you know, things like that. That's all within the capacity reports. It's not going to adjust anything, though, because that's a human type thing, you know? You know, someone's got to sit down and say, well, there's a similar work center over here. It may take 1 or 2 more operations, but they're not doing anything. Switch that operation over there.
Or subcontract.
Or subcontract.
Or change the schedule, but you have to manage it.
Exactly. So that's a decision-making process. Getting back to that type of thing, though, if the work center changed, okay, if you change that to 250, okay, there would obviously be a different queue time for that work center. And once that happens the next night, that whole routing gets re-back scheduled based on the new information. The same thing if you add an operation.
So it wouldn't be live, excuse me, live, it would be overnight batch?
The back scheduling.
Back scheduling.
Yeah, what it does is it comes up with the, in that case it'll stay the same. But if you add an operation, okay, it'll come up with a time in between there, in between the two, and just assign a date in between the two, so that when you look at the work sequence reports, okay, it'll fall in approximately where it's supposed to.
But you can online manipulate routings, etc.
Yeah.
And then back scheduling takes place when system run occurs in the evening. Is that right?
The readjustment of those. Okay. Initially, you know, when the job is put out there, it's all back scheduled, and then once changes start happening, then because there could be a bunch of changes for routing during the day. So you have, a bunch of situations that's going to change in one thing. You have operations being inserted, you have operations being deleted, you have work centers changing, you have the queue time on a work center changing. Okay, someone goes in and into a work center and changes that, and it'll go through every routing that goes across that work center that's open and change them all.
Can you also run the jobs out of sequence on the operations?
You can move them around, though. You can copy two and put it down here and say now it's 3.5.
In other words, I can't, if operation one is cut and operation two is drill a hole and operation three is machine the sides and I'm backed up and drilling a hole, I can't go from one cut to three machine the sides and then control a hole?
No, if you move the operation, yeah, you move it.
You eliminate routing.
I would be able to do it if I deleted two.
No, not deleted. It's just a copy. You say move 2 to 3.5.
Okay, that's what I was saying.
Falls in where you're
Would the standards move with it for the work?
Yeah, everything moves with it.
Okay.
The whole thing on average.
So you have the ability to work out a sequence out there too.
Once you start working on it, though, you can't move it. That's the only thing right now.
Wait a minute. Once it enters operation, once it enters the operation number one, once the job...
No, not the job, the operation. If you started operation two, you can't move it to 3.5. know, that's, and that is built upon premise that you're going to close operations, you know, sequentially, and also that you're going to cost operations sequentially. So
what would happen, Larry, if
you start something?
In operation two, we had 13 pieces.
Split a job.
And we decided that we need four of those pieces on the floor right now, so we're going to split the job.
Just live life.
But half of that,
well, you can run pieces ahead, okay? You can run, you know, four of those pieces through the job by themselves, okay? And have the other one sitting back at one.
Still sitting at one.
Yeah, you can do that. That's not. But what you can't do is you can't do more pieces on the next operation than you've done on the prior one. And that's, again, that's why you can't move operations around. Okay, so you gotta have some kind of checks that you're doing the right number of pieces. And one of the checks is
put pieces in. How do you back schedule science in this operation?
That's what I said before, you don't. You don't back schedule simultaneous operations. You back schedule operations sequentially, unless you got all of the simultaneous work being performed in the same operation. You're talking about on a cutlass on a tower, you have shear, burn, and cut. Now it may be operation two, three, and four. If you wanted that to back schedule simultaneously, they would all have to be operation two. Operation two would be taking place in three different areas, which we need to talk about.
We have a peculiar type of router which carries on it not one component, but a group of components that run across three different work centers and three different operations, but theoretically could be done at the same time. The parts don't affect each other. Then they all come back together again and form a welder. So you'd have to look at the example.
There's parts being made as they're dummy part numbers, okay? They're parts that are piece parts, but they're being made on the router for the parent. And they're being made in three separate areas simultaneously.
No, they're not. Sequentially. They're routed sequentially.
Well, they're routed sequentially, but they're really being performed simultaneously.
He needs the ability to make them simultaneously.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If, in other words, you're going to have some parts are going to be sewed, some parts are going to be burned, some parts are going to be sheared. Now, they to do them simultaneously, they would all have to be performed in operation, say, two. Instead of now, this is two, this is three, this is four.
Show us an example.
Yeah, we're going to have to, yeah, we're going to have to look at that.
But you could do that through the work center, so. Can you have the operation being performed in multiple work centers? Can you have a single operation being performed in more than one work center?
No, it would be multiple operations then.
It would have to be multiple operations.
I mean, you got different work centers, they're not the same place.
Yeah,
we have to look at that.
But
we have to do something here.
No, why would one goddamn router beat the whole system? You got 90,000 parts and you only got a few towers.
Yeah, you have
this ain't gonna be three to fit.
You got one out of eight of them.
Yeah, but how many runners on in Tennessee, A? And B, two of them could have no time on them. That would schedule them simultaneously. I don't know. Yeah.
We're going to show you a routing that we have. I think it's kind of it's unique to this operation. We're going to have a way to work this in. If we're going to use this and worship it and try to run the operation, we'll have to take it.
Let's dwell on it for a second, because Bill's got a good point. Like, one of the things we want to do out there is, let's say we want to take a towel or a frame, and we want to make a cell. We want to have raw material stored right there, and we want to have machines moved in there and everything. And today, well, we're making individual piece parts, and these piece parts are order controlled, and they're flowing in and out of the storeroom, and we're trucking them all around the building and processing transactions and all that shit. Tomorrow, what we want to do is carry one order out and say, give me a towel, and want the guy to turn around to that raw material, which is in his area as floor stock, if you will, and start cutting the material, burning it, punching holes through it, doing everything, And then finally, when he's got a tower, gives us the job, says, here's the tower. That everything is happening in that area, under the identity of the parent. Simultaneous. Today, you've got individual operations, individual parts being individually water controlled. And movement, in and out, issues, reissues, we're talking, we wouldn't have it. Instead of having 15 items to control, we'd have one item to control, and all of this would be happening in that cell. How could we handle that with the system? Would each thing that was going on in that cell have to be a separate operation? In which case, it would be sequentially scheduled, and say, stop me 9 years ago? Or is there a way to make all that stuff happen simultaneously?
Like in one operation or
a queue?
One operation or a single queue.
That's the bit.
One operation or a single queue.
That's what I'm saying. You have one operation, but now you have all these different things going on in one operation.
Don't you change your boiler monitoring? Don't you change your boiler monitoring system?
No, well, we don't know. Probably not. There's probably a short lead times in MRP, but I'm just thinking on the floor. I still have, I don't know how the hell we'd write the router, because we'd have to say operation one and load center XYZ, which was really a small factory unto itself.
Yeah, right.
All this stuff is going on. Now, how the router would be written, you might say operation one, part A, cut these two shares, part B, make, well, these two cross wealth members together, part C, do this. See, I don't know, writing that route is going to be kind of a work of art, but have you seen that anywhere before? Has that been addressed in this system? Is Phillipsburg doing anything like that?
There was, well, what they did was they got a piece of NC equipment, okay, that in effect did six operations on a bit, okay, and they just set up this one operator. But, you know, again, that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's one work center. It's not.
You would have one work center, but different machine tools or different processes going on with different burden rates, unless we establish one burden rate for the cell.
Well, you'd have one burden rate for the cell.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that all you want to do, make a decision as to what you want to track labor by operation, labor efficiency by operation, or do you want it just cell, or do you want to do it by the cell and say, okay,
well,
my
the cell
operation
would be
is
the
going
operation.
To the cell, and it's just like an outside purchase.
What I'm driving at is you're going to come down to saying the net result of producing these 7,000 parts in the cell is 8 million hours. So therefore, the standard for operation one is 8 million hours.
That's what you're going to end up with.
That's, and then how you write the route, it may look like the Manhattan telephone directory.
That's probably not the way to do it, because then you have no ability to gauge on your standards on the individual.
Well, you're looking with a system and a finite distribution of labor. Whereas with what we're talking about here is a consolidation of labor in a single area.
Well, yeah, but you still have individual operations within that. You would still want to measure those guys that are drilling the holes and those guys that are doing the welding.
Well, do you?
I don't know. If we did, we'd have to make them separate operations.
Well, okay. And if you made them separate operations,
that's what we're
measure the bottom line.
It's a lot easier.
It's a lot easier, but is that going to give you the information you need? I mean, are you going to be
not
able to say...
Not if you've got a problem in that area and the three different groups are all pointing at each other.
Well, that's the thing. You know, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
All three groups are going to start pointing at each other. And
so really, you probably, I don't know, that's what they have to look at with Carl, but I would think it probably depends on how you have that cell structured. If you had that cell structured, like Phil, to three different work activities, burning, shearing, and cutting, let's say, and you wanted to measure each group's efficiency, you'd have to make it three operations.
Right. You wanted to just take those problems with burning, shearing, and filling. Take burning, shearing, and weld. How many major assemblers that we have take those three processes? How many?
You got to cut all of them, too.
All the
weld
towers.
How
many towers?
Towers, frames,
I don't know whether they're welding.
Christ, everything that comes to a frame shop is going to be those things.
Because I need it.
That's a lot. But what I'm saying is,
it's really just how close... This is up to you to address.
I'm just trying to understand. What we're saying, I guess, is that
it depends on how
we can run it as a big bubble. We can do it as a big bubble and just measure towers.
That's right.
Or we could, then we have the finger pointing, or we could try and break towers down into individual areas to be measured, and then they'd have to be different operations. So that's up.
But seriously, how many other ones do you think besides towers and planes?
Everything that goes to that has multiple, like sewer, shear, well.
Yeah, it's the thing we'd like to get to, when we talk about a cell concept.
Well, let me put it this way, probably 50% of everything going through the shop is a fabrication of some sort.
Yeah, it's hard to say, I got an evaluation going on, it's incomplete at this time. We're looking at maybe producing a half dozen major items in this entire shop. We can never pull that program off. We're looking at the hour involvement right now on producing a half dozen major items, and that involves frames, towers, jacks, power pack bases.
I guess the thing is, what's
specialized machine components?
What's the major activities in the tower? You got a sewer material, you got a burn material, you got a well material. What else in the tower?
Very little burn.
Okay, well, just to say that, let's say for argument's sake that you had those major three activities. You want to burn, you want to sewer, you want to weld. And those are three activities you identified. You have a choice to say, I don't care what each of them individually is doing, I just want to measure the tower for you. Or, I want to measure three activities. It's still less than 9,000 part numbers, but that's, you know, whatever the hell you want to do.
I think that's what Larry's saying, right? How about we want to set it up as what we want to measure, what we don't want to measure.
But we can't do it.
You can make it as far as you want to make it.
The only problem, you know, is that if you want to have them as individual operations and you want them to run consecutively, there would have to be something additional built into the system. So some kind of decision like that would have to be made before, you know, we...
You got your queue times, you have to, you know, resolve which way you want to approach that as far as back scheduling, and you have this, the assignment of responsibilities to the seller or an activity.
Call it what you will.
Yeah.
So it's just our decision how far down we want to measure.
How many parts can we put out? That are machine shop.
Very few. Very few.
Tower bear is probably done.
Very few.
Probably.
You said the tower was built up on nothing other than monitoring?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Now that raw material right today goes to the form of individually identified and job controlled items. And then ultimately, crush members.
Gus members is individually job?
Yeah, could be.
Gus, it's...
Tower support could be an individual job. And then tomorrow we're saying we're not going to have all that. We're just going to have a job for the end tower. And all that other stuff's going to happen in the cell. No movement of material.
What about the frame?
Same thing. Today is what it costs, but we're looking at the same thing. We're just about the same amount of parts.
For all the frames that we need to build between now and the end of the year, it will take us 9 people to do it. And to spread something like 6 in a weld shop, 2 in a fabrication, and 1 in a machine shop.
I think all we have to do is continue on with the presentation.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, highlight the points that we...
Right.
There's going to have to be the decision made, and then...
Yeah, that's right. Now, go ahead and move on. This really isn't even pertinent to this. We just wanted you to be aware of it.
Yeah, before you leave, I want to show you a routing, though, that if we should stay...
Can we get through queue time yet?
No.
If we should stay in the same mode of operations, I think we have to learn how to do that.
The system is flexible. You tell us what you want, and we can change the rules. That's
okay. Most of the stuff should be there already. All right, getting back to what's in the work center, you have this responsibility center number, okay, which a group of workstations is made up of responsibility center. A responsibility center could be looked at as maybe what a foreman would be responsible for, okay, so that there are some reports that group things for all the work centers underneath it, you know, some of the hourly reports and things.
Is
like
that if there was a foreman in charge of several load centers, which we're going here, and each load center was perform different functions on a router. Is this responsibility center, the accumulation of all these load centers, or is it for each individual?
No, it's the accumulation of all the work centers in the contract.
Well, report would summarize.
The report would summarize, yeah. We'll get to some of the responsibility center report. But it's also could be used, or was used, as an accounting area, okay? This is the budget for Bernie, say, okay? And that's the responsibility center that, you know, it gets, all the burn centers get, you know, that responsibility center. Okay, so it's like the last four digits on the account number, okay? There's this conversion factor, which was used for the incentive system. We don't have to worry about that.
Oh,
there's,
excuse me. Availability as far as our responsibility center can be tied directly to the general ledger.
Yeah, right. The internal, external code, all it says is that some of these work centers you can set up here are external. They're subcontractors. Okay, so the operation 5 is work center 900, and 900 is a certain vendor, okay, so that you can assign all those operations that normally go through that vendor to
heat treat,
that type of thing. Okay, so the internal external code tells you whether it's an in-house work center or not. There's a labor grade, just as a reference type of thing to tell you what the normal labor grade for the work center is. There's a number of shifts, like I mentioned before. There's a manual machine factor, again, you don't have to worry about that. There's this maximum output and the date that the output was done.